Hi, from the Bear Cave, I'm Barry Slater, and welcome to today's reading of USA Today for Wednesday, April 17th. Our front page article from the USA Today is written by Josh Meyer. It's titled, Mayorkas' Newest Weapon Against the Explosion of Online Child Sex Exploitation. Department of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas says his office is ramping up efforts to fight the explosive increase in online sexual exploitation of children. Highlighting the severity of the issue, Mayorkas noted that last year alone, there were over 36 million reports of suspected online child sexual exploitation and abuse, up from 32 million in 2022. By comparison, there were 1 million such reports to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, or NCMEC, in 2014, long before nearly 95% of teenagers between 13 and 17 reported using social media. In exclusive interviews, Mayorkas and multiple DHS officials, from a frontline agent in Tennessee to a top transnational organized crime-fighting supervisor, provided USA Today with shocking details of crimes currently being committed against kids, live-streamed sexual assaults and even rapes of toddlers, predators grooming unsuspecting children on popular online gaming sites, would-be molesters targeting their underage prey on social media, and using geolocation apps to show up in person at their schools to meet them. On Wednesday, Mayorkas is announcing the launch of what he said was the first national public awareness campaign that brings together government and private sector partners focused on education and prevention of online child sexual exploitation and abuse. The new campaign's mission, Mayorkas said, is to mobilize young people, parents, educators, and community leaders to learn the signs of this crime in its many forms, what they can do to prevent it, and how to report it to law enforcement and how they can support survivors. It's a heinous crime that has not only spread, it's grown in the number of victims, the number of perpetrators online, not only across the country from coast to coast, border to border, but internationally across the globe, Mayorkas said. It is incumbent upon us and partners in communities across the country to raise the profile of this scourge, to raise awareness, to educate children who spend time online, their parents and trusted adults in their communities, Mayorkas said, adding, so we can prevent harm from occurring and, importantly, also hold perpetrators accountable. Some of the crimes are so violent and so troubling, Mayorkas said, that I don't think I should get into the specifics. Let me just say that it is beyond most people's imagination. The program, called Know to Protect, KNOW, the number 2, and then Protect, partners federal investigators with nonprofit organizations, private sector companies, and state and local law enforcement agencies. NCMEC and its Cyber Tip Report hotline, it's 1-800-843-5678, are also involved. Other founding partners include online gaming companies like Roblox and social media giants like Snapchat. To demonstrate their level of concern, Mayorkas and DHS last year elevated child exploitation to one of 6 formal mission sets for the department, the first one added since 2010. The others are border security, counterterrorism, administering the nation's immigration system, policing cyberspace, and disaster response. The new initiative focuses on multiple fronts, including awareness campaigns, education programs in schools and community centers, and collaboration with technology and gaming companies to create safer online environments for children. DHS is working with tech industry leaders to promote online safety and is currently negotiating similar agreements with potentially dozens of partners, said DHS's No to Protect campaign director, Kate Kennedy. Together, they will provide parents, caregivers, and children themselves with the tools they need to turn their fear into awareness, vigilance, and protection from the dark realities of online exploitation, Kennedy said. No to Protect hopes to unify the many ongoing DHS efforts to thwart online child sexual exploitation and abuse. It will be led by Homeland Security Investigations, or HSI, which serves as the principal investigative arm of DHS and protects the public from crimes of victimization, including child sexual exploitation. HSI works to investigate, apprehend, and prosecute offenders in the United States and to identify, protect, and support victims. It also investigates transnational child sexual abuse with dozens of bureaus overseas that go after those traveling internationally from the U.S. to engage in child sex tourism or illicit sexual conduct with minors. The online exploitation of children has become a global problem with devastating impacts on children around the world, said Homeland Security Investigations Executive Associate Director Katrina Berger, adding the disruption of these heinous criminal enterprises that are producing and distributing child exploitation material online must be stopped. But law enforcement cannot do this alone. The U.S. Secret Service, also part of DHS, will join No to Protect with its Childhood Smart program, created in partnership with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, that educates parents, children, and teens about internet and personal safety. DHS's Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, or CISA, CISA, administers schoolsafety.gov, a collaborative intra-agency website that provides information, resources, guidance, and best practices on a range of school safety topics, including online exploitation. And DHS's Science and Technology Directorate will contribute technical and scientific expertise, including leading-edge forensic tools and technologies to identify and thwart online predators. In recent months, top DHS officials have signed up a broad array of private sector partners for the Signature Initiative, including Google, Meta, Snap, Roblox, NASCAR, the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee, Boy Scouts of America, and the National Police Athletic League. And because child exploitation knows no boundaries, DHS is working closely with its global counterparts, including the European Commission and the Five Eyes partners, like Britain and Canada, to address the transnational issue effectively. Globally, the volume of child sexual abuse material has increased by 87% over the past 5 years, according to the 2023 We Protect Global Threat Assessment. That list of partners is expected to grow in the coming months as DHS reaches out to government and private sector entities that can spread the word about the threat and the ways in which it is responding, Mayorkas and other DHS officials said. Together, they hope to address the multifaceted nature of online child exploitation, including the fact that perpetrators often hold positions of trust within communities like teachers, religious leaders, and cops. Another focus of No to Protect, the ominous trend of using artificial intelligence to generate child sexual exploitation material. The DHS official said that becoming a gateway for predators who then move on to the abuse of real-life children. Also, on No to Protect's front burner, the skyrocketing prevalence of what's known as financial sextortion of minors. That's when cyber-savvy perpetrators overseas, especially in West Africa, pretend to be teenage males or females and persuade others on Instagram and other social media apps to share sexually explicit images of themselves. And as soon as they do that, the organized crime group will take a screenshot of all of this child's contacts in their social media app and say, "We're going to send these photos out to everyone if you don't send us $500 or $1,000, said Dennis Fetting, supervisory special agent at Homeland Security Investigations in Nashville, Tennessee. He said some teens panic and pay. There has also been a sharp increase in teen suicide, the agent said, especially these high school boys taking their lives because they view in their own juvenile mind that their life is over. One founding partner is Snap, which plans to share No to Protect resources with the millions of teens who use its popular Snapchat app to communicate. These horrific crimes cannot be ignored. They need to be discussed in the halls of government, at boardroom tables, and at kitchen tables. Jacqueline Boucheri, Snap's global head of platform safety, told USA Today, adding, "Young people need to be attuned to online sexual risks, and adults need to understand the issues so they can help young people in crisis." From the sports section of the Wednesday, April 17th, USA Today, an article written by Tom Shad titled, "2024 Olympics are only 100 days away. Here's how Team USA is shaping up for Paris." The Olympic flame has officially been lit. The 2024 Paris Games are now exactly 100 days away, and for Team USA, it's already time for final preparations. You can feel the energy and the excitement building, certainly inside the walls of our organization, but also around the country, U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee Chief Executive Officer Sarah Hirschland said on Monday. After COVID-19 reduced the past two editions of the Olympic Games to made-for-TV events with few or no spectators in the stands, the Paris Olympics have been trumpeted as a return to normalcy. There will be no mandatory masks or daily nasal swabs. Arenas are expected to be filled with fans as well as athletes' family members and friends. And instead of being partially or completely contained to a bubble, the Paris Games will largely take place in and around the heart of Paris. For local organizers, the hope is that these games are defined by both that openness and the ambiance that Paris will provide, from an audacious opening ceremony that will have athletes floating down the Seine River to landmarks like the Eiffel Tower, serving as backdrops for venues. But for Team USA, the goal remains the same. "We want to win the medal count," USOPC Chief of Sport and Athlete Services Rocky Harris said on Monday. As the Olympics inch closer, much of Team USA is still being built. Here's how the team is shaping up with 100 days to go, including the major qualifying events that are still on the horizon and the names you need to know. So who's on the Team USA roster so far? Harris said there will be more than 800 athletes on Team USA across both the Olympics and Paralympics, but only 89 Olympic athletes and 44 Paralympic athletes have qualified by name so far. With trials coming up and all the good events coming up over the next 3 months, this is really a go time for us, Harris said. Rowers, sailors, and shooters make up the majority of Olympians who have qualified for Team USA to date, in part because their sports have already hosted Olympic trials. Among the other early qualifiers are 2021 gold medalist Nevin Harrison in the canoe and Carissa Moore in surfing, as well as breakers Victor Montalvo and Sonny Choi, who will represent Team USA in the Olympic debut of breaking, a freestyle dance form also known as breakdancing. The U.S. has also selected the five marathoners who will represent it in Paris and named its 3x3 or 3-on-3 men's basketball team, which will feature former NBA player and BYU star Jimmer Fredette. The 3-on-3 men did not qualify for the Tokyo Games. So when are the Olympic trials in gymnastics and other key sports? In several of the most high-profile Olympic sports, athletes can book their tickets to the games only by performing well at the Olympic trials. Some athletes lament that the competition in their event at the Olympic trials is almost as daunting as the games themselves. So here's some dates and locations for Olympic trials in several key sports over the next 2+ months. The Olympic teams in these sports are usually finalized and announced within a week or two of the trials' conclusions. For wrestling, April 19th and 20th in State College, Pennsylvania. Swimming, June 15th through the 23rd in Indianapolis. Track and field, June 21st through the 30th in Eugene, Oregon. And gymnastics, June 27th through the 30th in Minneapolis. So what are Team USA's strongest supports? The U.S. has won more gold medals in track and field at 343 than any other summer sport, though that is at least partly because the sport has so many events. It's had similar historic and consistent success in swimming. In terms of sheer dominance, Team USA's strongest sport is probably basketball. The U.S. women will be vying for their 8th consecutive gold medal, while the men are trying to make it 5 in a row. The men's team in Paris will feature a loaded squad with LeBron James, Steph Curry, and Kevin Durant among its 12 members. More recently, the U.S. has had success in some of the newer Olympic sports, including a gold in surfing and a silver in sport climbing at the 2021 Games. Its women's water polo team has also been near unbeatable, winning each of the past 3 Olympic medals. So is Simone Biles coming back for Paris? Biles will have to wait until the Olympic trials in late June to officially book her ticket to the Paris Games, but she is effectively a shoe-in. After a bout of the twisties prompted her to largely withdraw from competition at the Tokyo Olympics, Biles returned to competition last fall and appeared as dominant as ever, cruising to victory in the individual all-around final at the 2023 World Championships. She also won golds in the team event as well as on balance beam and floor exercises. Who are the other big names? Shalice Jones was Biles' closest competition last year and figures to be in the mix alongside 2021 gold medalist Suni Lee, who has been sidelined for parts of the past few years with a kidney ailment. Team USA also figures to have a star-studded team on the track, starting with sprinter Noah Lyles, who will be trying to replicate his World Championships performance last year, in which he won a trio of golds in the 100 and 200 meter dash and the 4x100 meter relay. Shakari Richardson in sprints, Fred Curley in sprints, Ryan Krauser at shot put, Cindy McCollin-Laverone, 400 or 400-meter hurdles, and Athing Mu, 800 meters, are among the other big names contending for gold. And I'll have to admit, I don't recognize any of those names. And in swimming, I know this name, Katie Ledecky will hope to add to the 7 Olympic golds that she's earned over the past 3 summer games, while Lily King and Ryan Murphy will be among the other U.S. athletes who could leave Paris with multiple medals. So who are the rising stars for Team USA? Many of them are on the women's side. The basketball and soccer teams have yet to be finalized, but could feature some huge young stars, including Trinity Rodman and Sophia Smith in soccer, and maybe, just maybe, Caitlin Clark in hoops. Swimmers, Kate Douglas at 22 and 18-year-old Katie Grimes, as well as 22-year-old Reagan Smith, all competed as teenagers in Tokyo and should be even more competitive at their second games. And 21-year-old Amit Ellore is a reigning world champion in wrestling who has been touted as a potential future star. So let the games begin. All right, from the entertainment section of the Wednesday, April 17th, USA Today, an article written by Naledi Ushe titled, Liev Schreiber Reveals He Suffered Rare Amnesia Condition on Broadway Stage. Liev Schreiber is opening up about suffering an actor's worst nightmare during a performance on Broadway. The 56-year-old actor has been starring in Broadway's Doubt a Parable since February, and ahead of one show, he unexpectedly suffered from acute amnesia. Schreiber detailed the incident on Late Night with Seth Meyers on Thursday, telling the host he had a terrible headache ahead of the show and knew something was really wrong when he ran into his co-star, Amy Ryan, backstage and couldn't remember her name. He also could not recall common actor colloquialisms such as break a leg, even though he said it at least 30 times by that point. The Golda actor said he mentioned something was wrong to the stage manager, but they quickly called places. I go on and I do about the first 6 or 7 lines of the play sort of automatically. I realize I'm not connected, so I decide, let me try and get connected again. And the minute I do that, it all vanishes. The play is gone from my head, he recalled. I'm looking out into a dark audience. I know I'm in a play, but I don't know what play I'm in. I look down at my clothes and I realize I'm a priest, which is helpful, but not giving me any lines. Schreiber's understudy had to take over midway, and his friend, who is also a doctor, rushed to his dressing room with a terrified expression. The actor said he was convinced he had a stroke, but MRI results were perfectly fine. I find out ultimately from a neurologist I had something called transient global amnesia, Schreiber said. Transient global amnesia is a temporary anterograde amnesia with an acute onset that usually occurs in middle-aged and older individuals, and often caused by strenuous activity, high-stress events, or coitus, but it can be seen with migraines as well, per a Stat Perls dictionary in the National Library of Medicine. The condition typically resolves in 24 hours, but the Ray Donovan actor joked that, as a typical sort of Jewish hypochondriac person, he was convinced that I had a stroke and they just didn't find it. Schreiber slept it off, and by morning his lines were back. I go to sleep, I wake up, I remember the whole play. I call the theater and say, I'm coming up to do the matinee. And they're like, no, your doctor said you have to stay away until Tuesday. And I was like, no, I need to know that I can do the play, he said. I never had another problem with it. I was embarrassed and thought everyone would think I was lying and taking a night off from the theater, the actor said. He also joked that he was bummed out. He got transient global amnesia from a migraine instead of rigorous sexual activity. All right. From the tech section of the USA Today, an article written by Amaris Encinas is titled AT&T Offers Security Measures to Customers Following a Massive Data Leak. AT&T is trying to make customers feel more at ease by offering security perks after the sensitive information of more than 70 million people was leaked on the dark web in late March. The telecom giant said that 7.6 million current customers and 65.4 million former customers were affected by the breach, USA Today previously reported. The compromised data may have included personal information like social security numbers from AT&T data-specific fields from 2019 or earlier, but did not contain personal financial information or call history. It wasn't immediately known whether the data in those fields originated from AT&T or from one of its vendors. They were still investigating the incident. The company contacted all 7.6 million people impacted after a number of AT&T passcodes were compromised, opting to reset the passcodes as a safety precaution. They also offer complimentary identity theft and credit monitoring services, a service they continue to offer in addition to other new features like a $1 million insurance policy and help from an identity restoration team, according to reporting by KPRC-TV. AT&T also has encouraged customers to remain vigilant, monitoring account activity, reviewing credit reports, and reporting suspicious activity. Just a suggestion, but I look at my online bank account at least twice a day, real quickly, just to make sure. All right, from the travel section of the Wednesday, April 17th, USA Today, an article written by Zach Wichter. His title, Airplane Armrest Etiquette, Why the Middle Seat Should Win Out. How can so many of you be so wrong? I've written about airplane etiquette before, and I always thought the rules were pretty obvious, but it turns out not so. Etiquette depends on a shared understanding of right and wrong, and apparently we can't even all agree on airplane armrests. I've always thought it was an unwritten but absolute rule that the person in the middle seat gets access to both armrests as a courtesy. However, a 2023 survey by online booking platform Kayak polled more than 1,000 adults and found that more than half of you, at 57%, disagree with the idea that if you're in the middle seat, you get to claim both armrests, which is honestly crazy because in matters of decency, I am always right. Obviously, we travel a bunch ourselves at Kayak, and one of the things that we had noticed increasingly is the airport has always been one of the places where rules are super strictly enforced. But then rules are also out the window. Matthew Clark, Vice President of North American Marketing for Kayak, told me, saying, "You can have a margarita at 6:30 in the morning, but you can't bring more than 3.4 ounces of liquid through security." So what's the deal? Who gets the armrest? And what are the other unwritten, enforceable rules of air travel? Well, there's no definite answer. Disclaimer, I don't care about their survey results. I will stick by the adage that the window seat person gets to control the shade, the middle seat person gets both armrests, and the aisle seat person gets to benefit from a little extra legroom and the convenience of standing up whenever they want to. But according to Kayak's survey, only 43% of air travelers agree with me. Even Clark said he was surprised by the result. "This is what you get when you poll 1,000 people," he said, nodding to how little common ground we have on some things. 38-year-old Joel Schultz said he flies at least 2 or 3 times a month and is one of the people who disagrees with me. "Maybe 10, 15 years ago, I was like, yeah, middle seat people, they should get that armrest. But now it's like, nah, it doesn't make sense," the L.A. resident told me. He said, as airplanes pack more people into economy, he sees the armrests more as a physical barrier between seats than anything else, a line that's not to be crossed or infringed upon. "Regardless of whether you choose to sit in the middle, I don't think you're entitled to the armrest," he said. "As soon as that person in the middle puts their arms on the armrest, you're getting jabbed by their elbows." Still, with 57% of travelers in Schultz's camp, a fair number seem to agree the middle seat person should get both armrests. I'd say it's an unwritten rule, but it's written a lot, just not a policy. It's common courtesy, 49-year-old Ryan Gregg told me. Gregg, an automation technician from Lawrence, Kansas, flies about twice a week and said he'll often switch his flight if there are only middle seats available. However, if he has no other choice, he expects to access to both armrests. "It's the one thing you get for being stuck there," he said. So what other unwritten rules? Well, let's see, just be a decent human being. Sounds good to me. You're stuck together for, depending on where you're going, quite a while. I just keep to myself and be courteous of others. Just respect each other's personal space, Schultz added. What we like to say is just be good people, Clark agreed. Traveling is a lot of fun and a lot of stress. We just encourage people to be good to each other. All interviewees said they had good insights on what matters when you fly. Help everyone maximize overhead bin space by consolidating your stuff. Don't let anyone else hear your electronics, and give the person behind you a heads up before you recline your seat. And I'll add one, if you got long hair, keep it on your side of the seat. Well, that's it for today's reading of USA Today. I've been reading from their April 17th issue. If you have any questions about the articles I've read, call the Chris Listener line at 860-727-9579. I'm Barry Slater. Thanks for listening, and so long until next time.